अनंत कोटि वैष्णववृंद की जय। नामाचार्य श्री हरिदास ठाकुर की जय। प्रेम से कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृंद की जय। वृंदावन मथुरा धाम की जय। नवदीप मायापुर धाम की जय। भक्ति देवी की जय। तुलसी देवी की जय। All glories to assembled devotees, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरम चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जया मुदीरये। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी। So we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 7, entitled Lord Krishna Instructs Uddhav. Text 44. स्वच्छः प्रकृतिः स्निग्धो माधुर्यस्तीर्थभूर्निनाम् मुनि पुनात् यपां मित्रम् भिक्षोपस्पर्शकीर्तने। स्वच्छः प्रकृतिः स्निग्धो माधुर्यस्तीर्थभूर्णिनां मुनि पुनात्यपं मित्रं मिक्षोस्पर्शकीर्तने। स्वच्छः प्रकृतिः स्निग्धो माधुर्यस्तीर्थभूर्णिनां मुनि पुनात् यपां मित्रं मिक्षुपस्पर्श कीर्तने। स्वच्छः प्रकृतिः स्निग्धो माधुर्यस्तीर्थभूर्णिनां मुनि पुनात् यपां मित्रं निक्षोपस्पर्श कीर्तने। स्वच्छः प्रकृतिः स्निग्धो माधुर्यस्तीर्थभूर्णिनां मुनिः पुनात्यपां मित्रं निक्षोपस्पर्श कीर्तने। स्वच्छः प्रकृतिः स्निग्धो माधुर्यस्तीर्थभूर्णिनां मुनि पुनात्यपां मित्रं मिक्षुपस्पर्श कीर्तने। माताजी स्वच्छः प्योर प्रकृतितः बाय नेचर स्निग्धः सॉफ्ट or soft-hearted, माधुर्य स्वीट और जेंटल स्पीच तीर्थ भू अ प्लेस ऑफ पिलग्रिमेज निनाम फॉर ह्यूमन बीइंग्स मुनि अ सेज पुनाति सैंक्टिफाइज अ पाम ऑफ द वॉटर मित्रम द एग्जैक्ट काउंटर पार्ट इक्षा by being seen, apasparsha, by being respectfully touched, kirtane, and by being glorified verbally. Translation and purport by humble disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation, O King, a saintly person is just like water because he is free from all contamination, gentle by nature and by speaking, creates a beautiful vibration like that of flowing water. Just by seeing, touching or hearing such a saintly person, the living entity is purified, just as one is cleansed by contact with pure water. Thus a saintly person, just like a holy place, purifies all those who contact him, because he always chants the glories of the Lord. Purport. The words apam mitram, just like water, can also be read as aghan mitram, which means that a saintly person purifies all living entities by accepting them as mitram or his personal friends and saves them from their sinful reactions, aghat. The conditioned living entity falsely identifies with his gross material body and subtle mind and thus falls from the platform of spiritual knowledge. A conditioned living being is always lusty for material sense gratification, and if he does not acquire it, he becomes angry. Sometimes he is so obsessed with fear of losing his material gratification that he enters a stage approaching madness. A saintly person, however, is like pure water, free from all contamination and capable of purifying all things. Just as pure water is transparent, a saintly person transparently manifests the personality of Godhead within his heart. Such love of Godhead is the reservoir of all happiness. Water makes a most pleasing vibration as it flows and cascades. And similarly, the sound vibration of the Lord's pure devotee, who is saturated with the glories of the Lord, is most charming and beautiful. Thus, by studying the nature of water, one can understand the symptoms of a pure devotee of the Lord. ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाखय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपम् सागर जातां सहगना रघुनाथान्वितां तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजना सहितं कृष्णचैतन्य देवं श्रीराधा श्रीकृष्णपदा सहगना ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्णा करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधु जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानु सुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये वांचकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुव एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवास आदि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। Hare Krishna. This is one of the very, very beautiful verses, even to pleasing to the ears and the heart. The description and the analogy of a pure devotee, a saintly person, with water. And it's also very beautiful because we actually experience it. Many verses we understand from our shastras. As we study it, but not all the, we don't normally identify with every verse immediately in our neophyte stage. This is one of those verses where we actually experience it, because factually, for every one of us, when we talk of how a saintly person's touch or just seeing or hearing, what do we feel? We're here because of that, essentially. And we have a deep gratitude because of that. And that continues to grow as we, as years go by. So this is one of those things which is spontaneously identifiable with us. So we see the nature of a pure devotee or saintly person. And Krishna explains why we get so attached to this, to such saintly people. Because Krishna is in everyone's heart, and as we try to purify our heart by the cleansing process, see, we learn from the Shastra that there is a lot of dirt and contamination that we need to purify, and the process is by chanting the holy names of the Lord. So as we clean it, slowly, as the dust is cleaned from the heart, Krishna manifests himself in the heart of that person. So actually, to that extent that we to follow the process, Krishna is actually manifesting himself. Means he's always there, but he keeps himself covered because we choose to do so. Once we clear the layers, then we can slowly begin to realize that. And therefore, a person who has gone to the highest extent of spiritual progress, pure devotee, becomes very attractive to a sincere to all those who are sincere. Because Krishna is like a magnet. You know, the analogy is given that Krishna attracts, and our heart is like a metal. But the metal will only get attracted to a magnet if there is no dirt, if there is no coverings. Once you cleanse that, then immediately the metal gets attracted to the magnet. So the heart is exactly like that. So heart will be attracted to Krishna. So we get attracted to the more we sincerely follow, spontaneously we will have that very deep attraction to the saintly people, and we just want to be with them. So and the amazing thing is that the more we get attracted to Krishna, the more Krishna attracts others to us, and that is why, as far as the saintly person is concerned, because the saintly person gets attracted to Krishna, Krishna arranges to bring all the others, makes to bring all the others like us attracted to the saintly person. And we will see that we try to define externally, like if you see in our parampara, this parampara is full of, all, like we take from Prabhupada onwards, our Guru Maharaj and Prabhupada onwards beyond, Bhakti Siddhant Maharaj, God Kishodas Babaji Maharaj, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, and so on, that it is entirely the same identification. There's a common link here where people have come to them, gravitated towards them because they feel that attraction. And Krishna arranges that. So therefore, the attachment to a sadhu is exactly the same as attachment to a Krishna. Of course, in the neophyte stage, we have difficulty in understanding that personal relationship. And therefore, if we get attracted to a saintly person, through that we get attracted to Krishna. And Krishna is an ocean of mercies, Karuna Sindhu. So, and the devotee is the receptacle. He is the receiving end of all the mercy that Krishna is giving, because he is distributing it freely to all the to everyone around. But against which today, if we see who is a sadhu, you know, when you talk about saintly person, we have to be clear how do we identify a person like that? Because generally, it is often that people identify the sadhu first with the dress or how he talks, how he is, you know, the externals. But that is not really important. It is important, but it is not essential. In the sense that the vital ingredients of a pure devotee are the character and the substance of a person rather than the externals. Srila Prabhupada gives the he speaks about this humorous incident. Well, to illustrate the point, that once there was a sadhu, very dynamic looking, very flowing beard, and he was giving a class, and then one person, an elderly person, came in the class and he was sitting at the end of the class, and he started crying and weeping. So the sadhu was giving the lecture was extremely energized. You know, if you see someone who's really spontaneously reacting, he feels that, well, you know, I'm able to really have such an impact on this person. So he was even more energized. And the more he got energized, the more that man was weeping, the old man. So at the end of the lecture, then slowly everyone was going out, and they moved out, and this old man was still in the room. So he went up to him and said that, did you like my lecture? So he said, I didn't hear the lecture. So he said, but then why were you crying so much? He said, no, because, you know, every time you were moving ahead, you know, your beard reminded me of my goat. You know, and my goat died yesterday and I was very attached to the goat. So Prabhupada was making the point that, you know, we may externally think that the appearance is important, but it is not. Srila Prabhupada also had mentioned that, you know, when he was in Kolkata, the person, when there was a person who was staying opposite his house, who was also, every day he would dress into tattered clothes and go into the city to beg, come back in the evening and then change into pant and shirt. So Prabhupada is then quoting his Guru Maharaj Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati that this is the world of the cheaters and the cheated. You know, you can get fooled if you allow yourself to be fooled, and therefore through the eyes of the Shastra we need to understand. So sadhu is not necessarily someone having a long beard or long hair or shaven head or whatever. I mean, there's nothing against that. It is incidental. More important is the qualities. So in that context, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, for instance, who was the Param Guru of Srila Prabhupada. Here he was a district magistrate in the British government. He had a wife and Bhagavati Devi and 10 children. He was doing his duties, but he was a sadhu. By any definition, he was a sadhu. Anyone and thousands of people got transformed coming to him. So he wrote so many poetries. His lifestyle was incredible. He would, you know, he had time for everything, including writing books. He wrote more than 80 pieces of literature. And at the same time, he was so efficient, this was in the mid-80s, that he was so efficient that the British government actually laid a single meter gauge from his house, which most of us have been to Mayapur, when we've gone to his house and seen, just so that he would save time to come from there to the district magistrate's court. And what other district magistrates would take maybe an hour to take a decision, he would do it in 5 minutes. So he was so focused, so sharp, and he would be there between 10 to 4 or 5, then go back, and he would hardly sleep 2-3 hours, and he had a tremendous desire to preach, and he had a vision. He was also the one who predicted or projected what Lord Nityananda had said 500 years ago, that someday there will be all the... he said this in 1896, the year which Prabhupada was born, that someday the Americans and the Russians, the British and the Chinese, all will come together holding hands to and saying singing Jai Sachinandan Gaur Hari. Now saying in 1896, and then Prabhupada manifested, and actually that we see in most temples around the world, especially in Mayapur or in festival days, we see practically on big festivals, we see people from 60, 70 countries coming together. So we can see that this gives us the understanding of what a sadhu is. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the epitome of a sadhu, but he didn't necessarily, of course he was very traditional, so when he would be out of the court, he would always in his dhoti, kurta. So, but the dress is not important, the look is not important. It is not the gravel voice or the delivery or the the smooth discussion talk, because there can be a lot of style, but the substance is what we need to see. So if we look at the qualities of a sadhu, one of the most important ones is tolerance. And we see this, if we look at it again, this is a common link with all great personalities, and anyone we, even in our temple, if we respect anyone, and if we try to trace it, we will see that how this quality moves through every, practically every aspect of the devotee's life. Because there's so much in the material world that person has to tolerate. So many things are not in our control. What to speak of the externals, but even our own, the urges of the mind and the senses, we are not able to control that. So Rupa Goswami also says in Nectar of Instruction, Upadesh Amrit, that a person who is able to control his six urges is actually fit to take disciples all over the world. Why? Because it's so difficult to control the urges. So tolerating those urges, tolerating the various challenges, obstacles, difficulties that are from the outside, that are there in anything that we do, and these are all Krishna's arrangement. It's Krishna, but the devotee, sincere devotee recognizes that. So a sadhu is one that he accepts the challenge, and he is quite serene, calm in the face of these, because the big, one of the biggest tolerances is to the tolerance of temptations, because even when the pure devotee, the sadhu, becomes successful in the endeavor, then also it becomes even greater challenge, because one of the biggest things to tolerate is success. It is actually easier to have difficulties in one sense. I wouldn't say easier to have. Of course, we also feel painful when we have difficulties. But that brings us to Krishna. You know, when we will come running to to people who we can become humbler, and we become chastened. We are sobered down substantially. We take our spiritual life seriously when we have a major challenge that we have not foreseen. But when we actually get success, then Maya's tricks are so much more subtler. So controlling the gross senses is a challenge, but for a advanced devotee, those are generally that is not at all an issue. But the subtler, and even for neophytes, the gross senses are the one, but the subtler senses, slowly as we grow across, then the subtler senses are the ones which are a challenge, which is profit, adoration, distinction, people's recognition. So a person who is successful in his mission, even if he has got a spiritual mission, a big danger is that pride may come in, think that I am the doer, I have done this, and that I have the understanding of how there can be success. And in Prabhupada's case, you know, he went with only 40 rupees to the US with nothing, which really had no value because they didn't convert rupees. And then in a few years he had millions of dollars. I mean, not personally, but his institution had millions of dollars. But he didn't take anything for himself. Nothing. You know, he could have got a mansion, he could have got so many other facilities. But instead he used it for printing millions of books, literature, and so that his propagation of Krishna consciousness, his service to his guru, could really be take priority. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also said this, and we see this as an obvious, many times in this Kali Yuga, that money and sex play a key role in a challenge to a sadhu. And along with it, victory, success, pleasure, these are also big challenges. So a person who is able to tolerate that continues to show project Vaishnava behavior in the face of challenging or provoking situations is really a major symptom of a sadhu. Again, in Prabhupada's case, there were so many provoking situations right through, and he always looked at the positive. He never held grudges against someone. See, a sadhu has no enemies. However, when he's successful, people may see him as an enemy, but he never sees any enemy. He's always a well-wisher. So Bhagavad Gita also gives us the example of how we can follow the example of a tortoise. Like the tortoise has so many limbs, and then it has a very hard shell. So when it has difficulties or challenges, it just withdraws its limbs inside the covering shell, which is really hard to crack. And that's his protection. So similarly, in the case of advanced devotees, spiritual mentors, people whom we see them, the persons who have saintly qualities, their covering is really the acceptance of the causeless mercy, which is the chanting of the holy names. So that becomes the protection that they take this as a protection, and then so we are also advised to withdraw our limbs when we have sense objects, challenges, when we come across sensual objects, when we come across temptations, somehow we have to try to, just like the tortoise withdraws his limbs, we also need to try to withdraw our senses or bring them into under control. And the way to do it is by the positive method of taking our chanting seriously, whereby the cleansing process starts. And through that, then the other steps of devotional services would manifest. One of the ideal examples for tolerance is Haridas Thakur in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela. As we know that he was, even before, right from the beginning, because he had taken to chanting the holy names so sincerely, and when he had gain respect, people were coming to him, flocking to him. So Ramchandra Khan had been notoriously blaspheming him continuously and publicly. He had to tolerate that. Then this was before he sent that prostitute in the night to try to break his concentration and also his so that he could expose him. But instead what happened was that because Haridas Thakur was such a gentle and a pure devotee, that actually he converted, in fact the prostitute really became his disciple, and she actually became a devotee just by seeing him, just by associating and by witnessing the behavior of a sadhu. Later when he was also a caste Brahmin was challenging Haridas Thakur, because he was born in a Muslim family. So the Brahmin was extremely agitated and he was outraged. He said, how can you are born in a low family, how can you chant the holy names? And that too, how can you chant loudly? But Haridas Thakur never got provoked. And on the evidence of Shastra, he could bring up the facts that actually chanting loudly is First of all, the chanting of the holy name is meant for every living entity. Every person who comes in contact, it is actually open for all. And also that chanting loudly is hundreds of times better than chanting softly. So he, at all times, his behavior was under provocating situations also, extremely gentle and with a compassionate heart. Even later when the problems escalated for him, when the governor, when the Qazi convinced the governor to get him killed, and then he was whipped in 22 marketplaces, and he was, any other normal person would have died much earlier, but somehow he survived. And all along his mind was only fixed on Krishna's name, and never any hatred towards these the people who were. So they were also astonished that how is he surviving this. So but as we understand, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu later revealed to him that actually, because he was looking at him, because he was calling him, he was calling the holy name, actually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally descended to protect him and covered his body, and took all the lashes on his body, which he actually later revealed. So tolerance and forgiveness, the qualities of tolerance and forgiveness are actually go hand in hand. If somebody is really tolerating, because it's, if the tolerance is actually from the right understanding, that there's Jesus Christ, when he was tolerating all the, when he was being nailed to the cross, and he said that, "You, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they're doing." So similarly, Haridas Thakur also, his thoughts were not at all. He had so much compassion for the others because he understood that they are in ignorance. So that attitude of tolerating in the right consciousness, rather than tolerating with, you know, grittiness and then but still with a mind of hatred, that is not actually tolerance. That is something which you can physically restrain yourself, but actually you are priming yourself to really erupt at some point in time. So real, when we talk of tolerance, we are saying that it is actually an understanding from the mind, heart and soul completely of our situation and accepting it gratefully. And this is how Haridas Thakur was able to forgive very easily, because when he came back, they actually, he went through a lot of torture, and then they threw him over. Then he saw that the guards were actually in great trouble because they were not able to execute the orders. So he just withdrew his senses and went into samadhi, and so they thought he's dead, and then they threw him into the river. But then he came back because he was not dead. And then of course everybody fell at his feet. The Qazi also completely changed, and then he actually proclaimed, which is even there today, that from now on forever this the chanting of the holy names will always be protected. So this was because of his not only tolerance but his forgiveness. He never held it against them, and he displayed that compassion. So another thing in Haridas Thakur's case also, because by that time, though there were people like the Qazi, the governor, and others who hated him initially, but there were already by that time many who loved him. And when they loved him, he because of what he was, and thousands of people were affected by his personality, his character. So when he was asked by Lord Chaitanya, you know, for benediction, he said, you know, that I have this, you know, with all complete sincerity, Haridas Thakur was telling Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that I have this disease that I think I'm important because people are respecting me, and I'm beginning to think that they are correct. So please, you know, give me that, let me be born next life as either as a dog or as an insect in the house of a devotee, so that I can, by eating the remnants of the devotee, I can make spiritual progress. So that was his understanding. He never saw that people were Actually, he didn't consider himself to be anything. He always saw that it was Krishna's, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna were his, were actually doing everything. So that was the benediction he asked for. So the tolerance of being, tolerating of being praised, or being glorified, or it's a very, very difficult one. And this is something which, because when we have success in any services that we do, it's one thing to get appreciation. Definitely, devotees need appreciation also, to at least know that they're on the right track. Because for most of us, if we are in our neophyte stage, we are struggling with so many things. And then we intellectually, mentally accept the process of devotional service and we start executing it. And in that effort, Krishna helps us. And when we're doing it and then when we appreciate it, we are very grateful, because we get that further strength, further determination, further faith to carry on. So that's different. But then if that's carried on, and then we start thinking that because we misidentify things, that we have, we actually deserve it, and we are the ones who have caused the success of that service, or the suddenly, the service has flowered and people are seeing that, and then because of me, and then if I were not there, it would not be as good, etc. If that starts coming in, then we are going to have a major setback. So in Prabhupada's life also, it is very nice to, pleasing to actually see the parallels of how many, like we saw in Haridas Thakur's case, how obstacles he had and how he faced it. Similarly, in Prabhupada's case, we talked about he went with 40 rupees only, with no money. But, he, for several years before he went, in the 40s, 50s and 60s, before he went to the U.S., he had so many failures, failure after failure after failure in many areas. He tried so much to preach. He went to Allahabad. He did his best. And he was having, once he got land also, and then the governor's wife took it away for some other purpose. And in India at that time, everyone would say that, yes, we know Bhagavad Gita, we understand it. So he put in all his efforts, but he never got, he didn't feel despondent because of his setbacks. He just carried on. And later when he went, finally also, and he, all along that time also, he had no money, no supporters. And then when he went also in the Jaladut process, he had so much difficulty. First he had to actually beg for a ticket just to, he never took for himself, but only for others. Just for preaching, he needed the ticket, and he was given a ticket in a cargo ship. And a cargo ship, none of us probably have traveled in a cargo ship, and that too for 45 days. Nowadays, we can just fly. In 15 hours, we are in the U.S. But that time, at 40 days, and that too, it was not a cruiser liner or something. It's not a luxury liner. It was practically no association, but he was only associating with the crew, that they were the only ones who were there. And had two heart attacks, then reached Boston. In the initial years, absolutely not a single supporter in the world. Nobody was there with him. Even though he was struggling, and again, not feeling despondent, he carried on. He just went on and on, saying that, because his pleasure was to serve as Guru Maharaj. His pleasure was not to see that was secondary as to what was the manifestation of whether it's successful or not. His pleasure was in the execution of, and faithfully and sincerely, of his Guru Maharaj's service. The rest is in Krishna's hands. That is the way he showed us. So he kept on tolerating all the setbacks, physical, and when he wrote to his other supporters who were in India, well, I would say at least the people who knew him, his god brothers also, who were his friends, but they all kept saying that, Swamiji, you come back, it's impossible. So they were discouraging him, but he never took it that way. He was alone, all alone. And that too in the U.S. for a person at that age to tolerate the freezing winter. If you have not gone there, we have no idea what it is like, how it can be, how difficult how freezing it can be. And, and then he was all alone, so the tolerating loneliness, tolerating abuse of all kinds. After a lot of efforts, he at last found some person who he thought could help him. He gave him a place in the fourth floor loft, but then he turned out to be a drug addict who one day became high on LSD and then almost killed him. And he attacked him. So Prabhupada had to leave everything, whatever little he had, a typewriter, and he just had to leave and ran down four floors. If you can picture the sight, an old man running down four floors for his life. Can you imagine? I mean, now if that is not a setback which could say that, well, this is the last straw, let me now go back, because Krishna doesn't want this. I've tried, and now I'll see what else. So it could, people would have said, well, philosophically also it makes sense that he's still going to be Krishna conscious, he's still going to make devotees, he will still come to India and then go to Vrindavan and have his center and talk, and that's what most sadhus would do it. So that nobody would have grudged him that. But he was so totally focused on one thing, and how can I serve my Guru Maharaj? My Guru Maharaj said that you can preach to the entire world in English language. And he meditated for 33 years before he went, and in spite of all the tolerances, this kept on going. So he never, so that is really tolerance, that to not move away in face of any setbacks, and to just whatever comes, we can tolerate it and transcend that and go ahead with our service, all difficulties. So, another quality is also of compassion, karunika, titikshava karunika. Karunika means compassion, kindness, mercy. Vasudev Dutt is an example where he actually begged the Lord when he was asked to take a benediction that let all the sins of every living entity of this world come upon me, and let me take it all so that they can progress in spiritual life. Prahlad Maharaj is another example of compassion. How much he went, the torture he went through at such a young age, at the age of 5, boy who was just an innocent boy, and his father was the most powerful personality in the entire universe. Even the demigods were afraid of him, Hiranyakashipu, and having such a talk of David Goliath kind of story. I mean, it is an understatement to see that a young boy facing the most powerful emperor in the entire universe, who was harassing him, who actually ordered that he should be killed, and they made every effort, but somehow Krishna protected. And this is why we see that Krishna's reciprocation is very mysterious. It is not something which can be seen, but it can be understood by realizations. And that happens when we first understand from the eyes of the Shastra. The Bhagavatam is really, this is Rishimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam, the stories are meant to actually illustrate what is the what actually realistically happened, whether it happened in Satyayuga or it happened in Kaliyuga, whether it was Prahlad Maharaj or whether we are now taking Haridas Thakur in Kaliyuga in just 500 years ago. But the principles have been the same of how a pure devotee, a saintly person behaves, how an association of the saintly person, as the purport says, that even this moment's association of a saintly person, a touch or a feel or a talk or a hearing, a saintly person can completely transform. So our movement is actually of the parampara, all saintly persons, their main business is transforming hearts. Actually, it would not be incorrect to say, if Prabhupada's in a passport or wherever he has to write, occupation, transforming hearts. But that was what he was doing, 24/7. That's what all saintly persons do it. Narad Muni, the Guru Maharaj of Prahlad, the Guru Maharaj of Dhruv, the Guru Maharaj of Valmiki, he transformed all these people were Mrigari, the hunter, he transformed their hearts in so many ways. In Dhruv's case, Dhruv Maharaj's case is remarkable to see that here was a boy who began his quest not for the sake of mukti or not for the sake of spiritual progress, but out of vengeance and out of ambition to get more and more land. That's what he started. At five, he was Kshatriya, he was humiliated. And for a Kshatriya, humiliation is dishonor is worse than death. So he started that. But because when he went to the forest, then he was tested. And Narad Muni, who really was his guru, who came there and told him that, you know, he tested him, but he accepted Narad Muni's instructions and the process that he laid down of how he should go about in the forest. Because he followed his Guru Maharaj sincerely, his spiritual master very sincerely, Dhruv Maharaj's heart completely changed. His desires also changed. But here is the amazing thing, that Krishna reciprocated with Dhruv Maharaj. He fulfilled all his desires. He fulfilled his desires, his initial material desires also, and he fulfilled his end desires. But in the beginning, his desires were, he wanted great kingdom greater than his father, his grandfather, his great-grandfather, Lord Brahma. He wanted greater than that. And what did he get? He actually got Dhruva Lok. A spiritual planet was named after him, and that is in Vaikuntha. It's in the Vaikuntha planets. So it is in the spiritual world, much higher than Brahma Lok. We may think Brahma Lok is the topmost planet in the material world. So he went beyond his great-grandfather, Lord Brahma. So he also, and his end desires were that he was completely surrendered to the Lord, and he had no material desires left. In fact, so because of that, the Lord actually gave him entire universe to rule for 36,000 years. Now, if that was the end of the story, we would say, okay, like we say today, then, you know, and then everyone lived happily ever after. You know, it's a perfect story, like we see in movies or in theaters, that, you know, there's something, challenges are there, and then everything works out and that's fine. But now, what was Dhruv Maharaj's mood at that time? He was so ashamed. After he got the best of both worlds, he got the material world, he got the spiritual world, and he was so ashamed that why did I have that desire in the first place? That Krishna is fulfilling my material desires also. I don't want it now. So it was actually an austerity for him, but he took it as an austerity. So externally it may seem that, well, he had everything made for him. But what he went through and the austerities that he went through, but because he followed his spiritual master and because he purified his heart, when he said that actually now all these desires, I mean, are like broken pieces of glass. I don't want it. You know, but when Krishna gave him, he didn't reject it. He just accepted it as a service. So that is the mood of a pure devotee. So, Srila Prabhupada also had everything taken away from him. He lost when his business went, he was trying to work, and after a lot of efforts, his business went, it was a complete failure. So what happened when it got burned down? He just laughed. His first reaction was to laugh, because he saw that this is Krishna's element. After every effort, it was not that he just walked away from it. He didn't put any effort. He had put a lot of effort. But he saw this ultimately, that Krishna wants him for taking up the larger challenge. So he showed that he didn't have, and then later he had millions of dollars, millions of rupees coming every day, 100 temples within 10 years. So he had two contrasts. He had a typewriter in the beginning on which he was trying his best for 20 years. And then he had the best printing presses in the world, which were actually printing his books. But he was the same. He did not change. He was at when he was printing the back to God, when he was writing the back to God at printing, publishing, trying to sell everything. He used to walk from all the way from Vrindavan to Delhi at times, or sometimes he would go by trains. Went to such miseries because he had no money. And later he had Cadillacs and Mercedes all over the world, but he was the same, didn't change anything. He just took whatever, like Dhruv Maharaj. Dhruv Maharaj is, he didn't want it, but Krishna gave him, so he took it as a service. Similarly, Prabhupada also took it as a service. And why we see this, how we see this, because when Prabhupada saw this as that Krishna wants him to come back, you know, he wound up everything. The last few months he came to Vrindavan, and he was always actually in his heart, never away from his Guru Maharaj or from Radha Damodar temple. He said he saw this several times, that when he was in Los Angeles also, he said, you know, he actually created Vrindavan wherever he went. So he was never away from Vrindavan. But later in the last few months, he actually came to Vrindavan, and he was completely detached from what, he had no possessions, and at the end, not a single thing in his name. He left everything in the institution. There was no name in the institution, International Society for Krishna Consciousness, though he was the heart and soul, he was the creator, and the originator, everything, the builder of this institution. There's no name mentioned about him. He never wanted that, because it's Krishna who's the person. So we could see how a loyal servant of the Lord becomes a saint, and then how he can transform hearts. In the end, we can say that in Prabhupada's parampara also, in this parampara, Prabhupada's disciples also have been doing the same wherever they go. There are many, many examples, but just to give two illustrations. And when Prabhupada went to Russia in 1973-71, I think, and he met this Professor Kotovsky, he went for 3 days, and two people came to see him. One person wanted to see him, and he brought his friend. And Prabhupada never left the hotel room except to meet Kotovsky and came back. That's it. And those were the days when there was that iron curtain, then the KGB, and there was wherever you went, you were always followed and spied upon. So Prabhupada just remained in his hotel room practically. And this Indian diplomat's son came to meet him. He was polite and he was curious to know him. But he brought a Russian boy, his friend. And this boy just heard him for 3 days consecutively. And then Prabhupada went back. But he had sowed the seeds at that time. And then from that one seed, this one devotee, Ananta Shakti Prabhu, started, and in Russia many, many devotees then sprung up. Today there are hundreds of thousands of devotees, maybe thousands of temples, nobody knows. Russia is so big that, you know, there are 11 time zones in that country. 11 time zones. We have one. Bombay and Calcutta have the same time. There are 11 time zones. It takes 11 hours by flight from one end of Russia to the other. So you can imagine the size of that country. So people don't, when we were asking some recently, our devotees, Shankar Nitai Prabhu was here, he said, I have no idea how many devotees there are, how many centers there are also, because it's massive. But it just, the spreading. Now this happened just because of one seed that was sown in 1971, and that one devotee took it. But we have some clue about what tortures and killings and the brutal treatment that they went through, the mental asylums, and they were subjected to by the police, at least till 1990, till things opened up, because they were trying to propagate spiritual life. So they tolerated it. Right? So this movement is actually based on, this parampara is continuing in that way. And the second example, another example among many, would be the London, those three couples that went there. We only hear the end result that they met the devotees, they met George Harrison and the Beatles, and then they had so much success. Yes, but if you go through the several books about the London Yatra, and you can see that actually they were in such abject poverty, that the initial devotees, the three couples, and then the initial ones who joined them, they were living really, you know, hand to mouth, practically nothing to eat, just salad and things like that right through the day. And then Sunday they used to have a feast for the deities and then the devotee, the people who would come. So their mood was to tolerate for themselves and give to the others. And bring, and then we see now today London is perhaps one of the strongest centers in the entire world in Krishna consciousness. I mean, again, thousands of devotees and very strong, many dozens of centers and very, very, and very well respected. It is regularly, lectures are, satsangs and lectures are arranged in, among ministers and members of parliament and senior diplomats. So the respectability of the movement is coming all because of the initial efforts. So this was to please their spiritual master. In Russia, in London, in all other places, even in Juhu or in other centers here, the effort was to please the spiritual master sincerely, and in doing so, follow the process, whatever the consequences, whatever the challenges, whatever the difficulties, has to be tolerated and not to deviate from the path. So we are very fortunate, really. So whenever we do have our moments of weaknesses and when we have our challenges, and we have to just remember that by no desires of our, or by no maneuverings, by no efforts, we have been just put this, into this position. You can say we may be bewildered, but we can get out of our bewilderment, and we hear the Bhagavatam, then we understand how fortunate we are. So rather than trying to see why we've come here, or to try to look at the smaller issues about our environment, the challenges, the problem, which everyone has to go through. If you look at the challenges and people that others have faced, which are far more in nature, and how they have progressed through that, both in our generation and in our parampara and also in the other yugas, then that gives us the inspiration, and the strength to overcome the difficulties, and actually to develop that gratitude and also the pride that we belong to, a movement, we belong to Krishna, and we have been chosen to we have been given the opportunity to do some service in whatever way we can. So actually that's, it's a really a winning situation for us. So there's never any moment that we need to feel, we should never lament about it. So we'll stop here. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.